Yeah, he's our favorite nerd. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
This is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Coming up on this week's Computer Talk Radio, Keith Emcedor and I are going to talk about the Amazon AWS outage in a little bit more of a deeper dive than we normally do on the news. Marty's going to talk about, can it really be live if everyone's half dead? Steve Keske and I are going to talk about science fiction on the small screen and the big screen. Dr. Doreen Galley is going to give us an insight into the Retail Supply Chain and Logistics Expo. I'm also going to cover some of the dangers of computer unreality. I'm going to answer a question on the IT Pro series to Andrew. Why do IT pros sometimes seem hurried and distracted? And Chloe asks a question, are we in an AI bubble? Kevin, why do Bluetooth headphones have slight delays or stereo issues? And Ted, my son got scammed selling shoes online. What should I do next? All of this on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can check out the podcast if you missed any of those items. Of course, you can also reach me there. Scroll down to where it says Contact Us Today. I also have a toll-free phone number, 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-637-3888. If I don't answer, leave a message. I will get back with you. Let's dive into the news, and there's a lot of different things that came forward on the news this week. First up, Apple's announcement of no trade-in value, actually, for the Apple Vision Pro. It came the same week that Samsung announced their Galaxy XR goggles that are nearly half that of Apple's. Now, while Apple is on their second version of the idea with the new M5 chip, it's also lagging in some areas of comparison put up against the Apple Vision Pro M5. Samsung's is a little lighter. It's got a better field of view and resolution. Sure, the Apple Vision Pro has a better battery in 3 hours versus 2 hours, the frames per second, but it still seems like they're competing in this same space. Nevertheless, at $1,800, Samsung is clearly placing this in a marketplace that's not for most people. I'm not fully sold on the idea of the isolated concept of these types of devices, and my thoughts are really going in the direction that either one's long-term use case for myself seems to be just an expensive toy on my shelf of misfit toys. The era of reality and AI is blurring. You're probably aware of this. We've been talking about this off and on for a little while when we talk about things like deep fakes and whatnot. And in the last week, a furor arose when a political ad deep faked a video with Senator Chuck Schumer's likeness, and it was marked as AI imagery with a quote that he actually did say. So it's really only about the video of him. However, a little bit worse was the news of various poverty organizations that are using AI to depict people in extreme poverty in an attempt to garner more funds. Many of these were not marked or even poorly marked, and we've moved quickly from videos created using Sora for humor straight through to a series of manipulation and control and what I feel is kind of a level of abuse of AI that we should have seen coming. This will become more pervasive in the coming months and years, and the blurring of reality is going to sharply increase. This trend could obscure or even shatter one of the oldest laws given to man, not to bear false witness. Now, in that same direction, and this, what I'm going to tell you about isn't Luddites, but rather some really big names. Richard Branson, Steve Wozniak, and a host of folks have signed on to the idea of a pause in the development of AI superintelligence. of the 3,000 or so big names and the 21,000 overall who have already signed on to a new letter. Some of these are AI pioneers or leading AI researchers, and some are big names in the political or religious world and so forth. This is all due to the concern that we're moving in a direction that is too fast with no controls and no regard for longer-term potential impacts. Some of the goals by AI companies are to build superintelligence, and yet they seem to disregard the potential impact on everything. We're talking civil liberties, we're talking privacy, we're talking dignity, and even national or earthly security. Some of the AI entrepreneurs seemingly have dreams that could rival those who built the Tower of Babel, and that should scare all of us. Now, Meta's deep dive into our lives is getting deeper. Imagine you give Facebook access to your camera roll, thinking it's for uploading photos and videos to your feed. Well, back in June, they offered up cloud processing features to help you find and improve content for sharing. Now, news has come out. It seems that AI is scanning all of those images to train Meta AI to prep for enhancing your imagery and also to use however they see fit. What's in your images that you don't want out there? They're scanning these. Family photos, location data of all of your photos, your driver's license or license plate might be on there, screenshots of personal information, items that can be used to sell to you or later hold over your head. This is marketed as a convenience feature to you, but I'm really unnerved by this. This reeks of an intrusion that could be far more insidious over the long haul, if it isn't already. Now, the saga of Apple versus Epic Games continues, and we should have expected this. This is like watching a boxing match play out in ultra slow motion. We've got these big, huge, giant companies. Epic Games is somewhere around number 6 on the top biggest games companies out there. Apple, of course, is on top of the world. They are the largest company in valuation out there in the world. So, you know, they're going to be fighting this, and let me just unpack some of this. Okay, so the core of this argument is over Apple's decision to require anyone, everyone, who puts games up on the App Store to give over some 30% of every App Store-enabled transaction, and that goes to Apple. That goes right into their pockets. That's why they're valued so high. For Epic, they're the makers of Fortnite and many other famous games. This isn't a small amount. This is a huge amount of money that they would have to hand over to Apple rather than say, hey, if you want to buy something, you can do it here, or we'll handle the transaction over on our place. Now, a judge ruled at the last point that Apple's App Store wasn't playing by the spirit of previous decisions that said you have to kind of spell this out. You have to free up some of this stuff. They said this to Apple. And they gave a lot of different remedies, and the judge gave a lot of guidance as to what they could and couldn't do. Apple has returned to court, and this is going over the previous judge's head to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they're claiming constitutional protections against what was a contempt order, but also a number of other items along the way. Apple is, as any good attorney would say, they're requesting that the orders be vacated and that they get a new judge over this case. It's going to be very interesting to see how all of that unfolds. General Motors CEO Mary Barra was recently interviewed and announced that General Motors would be dropping Apple CarPlay and Android Auto from their entire lineup, not just the EVs so far. This represents the first non-EV company to commit to a complete and total abandonment of the existing infrastructure that has almost become a mandatory investment for all car manufacturers for their in-car systems. Only Tesla and Rivian have been so bold as to buck the trend, but their own systems are vastly different than what most people put out. This is going to be part of a new platform on GM vehicles starting in 2028, but it begs the question as to what the replacement will be. Most systems that I've seen from OEMs have been lackluster, and they don't touch the capabilities of CarPlay and Android Auto, and they insist that you pay for their own maps, their own add-ons, and more. GM better be ready to super impress people on this front, otherwise many people are going to wonder if there are better car options out there. Coming up next, Keith and I are going to talk about, yes, the Amazon outage that, yeah, some people said it crashed half the internet this past Monday. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Keith M. Sedor joins me at a different time than normal because we do have... We have a different kind of a topic. We're not going to dive so much into Apple, although I am going to ask you at some point if how much Apple that you know of was affected by this. But let's first off, let's set this up. Let's go back to the beginning of the week. And on Monday morning, a lot
of... wee hours.
Yes, a lot of people were rattled. They were awakened in IT departments across the country when Amazon Web Services, AWS, suffered a crazy kind of outage, something that was instantly people were blaming this on hackers and everything else. And well, we'll get into what the mistake was there in just a moment. But first off, let's explain what AWS is. Amazon Web Services is a place where people do cloud storage, they do servers, anything that you might think of as cloud is possible to go into Amazon Web Services. We go back in time a number of years ago, Amazon building their huge organization, they found out they had some extra servers sitting around that weren't getting enough use. So they found some clients and said, hey, we'll give you storage space here and you're going to pay us some money. And they found that they made a lot of money doing this. So many major corporations have some level of Amazon Web Services involved with their providing technical services out to their customers. So this is something that has impacted us in a number of different ways. Keith, what was your first experience with this?
Well, before I get into that, Benjamin, I want to, take a couple steps back,
yeah,
and share some insights with you and some of my practices, because the reality of it is I am an Apple certified consultant. The reality of it is you say, oh, he's a Mac guy, so he must have HomePods and, you know, HomePod minis. And the reality of it is, Benjamin, I don't. I have Amazon Echoes throughout my house because I find it's a much more robust infrastructure. And as far as early AI assistants go, I find the Amazon Echo, or Alexa, as some people call it, although I call it computer because I like Star Trek, and you can change the invocation name, which you can't do on an Apple product. Siri is colloquially dumb as a box of hammers, and I get much better feedback from questions.
Okay. I found this on the web.
She just screams out there. Yeah.
Yes. I get much better feedback from things that I inquire about the Echo. So that having been said, I was looking to turn the lights off late at night because, you know, why in the 21st century would I get up and turn the lights off manually when I can just tell the computer to do it?
I don't remember a time where I actually had to get. Yeah, I do. Never mind. Go on.
But the reality of it is that my Echo devices were not responding. And it was literally, you know, I thought it wasn't connected to the internet. So I reset my router and reset the internet. And when it came back up, everything was working on the internet, but not these devices. And the apps were malfunctioning because they weren't hitting the right places on the server. And I basically had to delete everything, remove the app and start all over. And it turns out it was none of that. I didn't need to do that. All I needed to do was wait because my reinstalling the app and relogging in was not going to get me access back to my services because the infrastructure was down.
I had a number of different issues here with my own Amazon Alexa devices. I had lights that weren't responding when I got up in the morning. I had lights that were over responding. I found out, turn off a light, and 2 minutes later, it's turning back on. I'm like, oh, that's not right. Wound up rebooting the house later on, and that seemed to
have that wasn't the solution.
Rebooting the house is kind of a weird concept for folks, but I wanted to make sure all of the devices reset and took care of that. So all of this was due to as far as we can figure out, because some of the information along the way, it gets a little obscured and whatnot. It does appear that it was some kind of a patch or update or something that they were doing that wasn't properly deployed, and it took down something called DNS, Domain Name Services.
It's always DNS.
Yeah, DNS is kind of the map of the network, and this is the map of if you type in computertalkradio.com, your computer is actually going to reach out to DNS, find out where computertalkradio.com is located, which is actually at a number. And it will route all of that information to that number, not using the actual name. That's how DNS works in
Let's simplify this a little bit for our listeners who might not be IT folks like you and I are. Think of it this way. You walk into the lobby of a big building, and there's a directory. And from that place in the lobby, you can get to any of the offices because all of those listings correspond to places that are physically there in the building. Now, a crazy person comes along, jumbles up all the letters on the directory in the lobby, and now you can't find where anything is. Everything's still there. You just can't find it and can't get to it because you can't map to it.
Yeah. This thing impacted a ton of servers and a ton of companies.
Basic stuff. 12 like people hours. Couldn't order from the McDonald's app. People couldn't order an Uber.
Yeah. It impacted Google. Hulu, Lyft, Netflix, Reddit, Spotify, T-Mobile, Verizon, Venmo, Zoom, and that is just
the iceberg.
This was a massive outage, And a lot of people in the following days talked about the idea of maybe we're relying on the cloud too much. And
yeah, too many eggs all in one basket.
I will tell you, I am glad, not that I had to use it, but I'm glad I've got a NAS. I've got on-site storage here in my home for all of my files. Yes, I do use the cloud, but I don't use that as any kind of permanent repository. It's a location for convenience sake and nothing more. What are your thoughts on this, Keith? Are you thinking of changing anything in your world?
Well, like a lot of the news sources were saying, I saw reports from CNN and ABC, and they were asking similar questions like, what is it that you as a user can do to protect yourself? And the reality of it is there's nothing you can do because it's all big corporate server-side stuff. And really, it's incumbent upon all of these companies to diversify and not have all of their network resources, all of their routing resources going through one company. So, you know, AWS, Amazon Web Services is one of the leading ones.
It is the leading one. It is the biggest one. Yeah.
The leading one. I think it's incumbent upon
everyone,
the companies to have another system set up, maybe if it's not in use, just like with a backup generator. It's something you can switch to quickly while the other thing is being fixed.
Yep, very true. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Chloe and I had a great discussion in regards to if AI is in a bubble, if this is a boom that is slowing down, is it becoming less reliable and stuff like that. Of course, you can talk to me as well. Use the phone number of 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-6373-888. If I don't answer the phone, please do leave a message. I will get back to you, and I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. In Chloe's case, a lot of do I feel like, why do people feel like AI might be in a bubble? Is it slowing down? Is it becoming less reliable? And let's start this off with understanding that this is a newer technology. I am looking at something that, you know, you discover something like, I don't know, the cotton candy machine, and it's there and it runs out of sugar. It's the cotton candy is delightful at first, but suddenly you're stuck there and you don't have any more. And this is, you've got, you've got this situation where, and that's probably a poor analogy, but maybe hopefully that works. It's this idea that initially we discover it. We go, this is great. This is wonderful. Think of all of the capabilities. And then we get to the other side and we go, okay, it's not doing this. It's not doing that. And we... the initial impression is amazing, but as we move along, we move forward, things aren't as good as what we had hoped. And this also is something that we're facing a struggle with because they are constantly upgrading how all of the different AI platforms work. Every time we turn around, they've got a new major version, but even in the minor versions even within those different versions, they are making tweaks on a regular basis. We are seeing progress in various areas and fixes, and we can't even fathom all of the different things that they are working on, that they're doing. A lot of the models are being rushed out to market, and that's because this is a big, huge race. This is an AI race where all of these different things are coming along and they have to get to market before everybody else. And this will reflect poorly on performance. This is going to come up with problems in AI where there may be some level of issues with dealing with numbers all of a sudden, or dealing with ethical issues, or dealing with reading basic text and converting that over. And some of the areas are stronger than others. As a matter of fact, if you use different AI platforms, you're going to get a different result each on each different platform. It's not like all of the platforms are using the same information. They're not using the same algorithms. They're not using the same processors. And all of this stuff starts to get thrown off. And that has thrown a lot of people. The idea of market saturation has led to very high expectations. There are a lot of different companies that have invested a lot, and they're invested in their investment, and they do see a future ahead, but they're running into struggles because what they thought would be arriving sooner has been pushed down the line, and it's going to become later and later before we get to these different goals that they want. So even small flaws in the system become magnified in their minds. We have other issues that come along with this infrastructure. What we're talking about is the computing power, but also the access to all of the data on the internet, all of these different pipes into these data centers, and the data centers themselves. All of these are expensive, and it is very difficult for people to scale all of this responsibly, as well as keeping track of all of the different information that's going on. This is kind of that instability area because it is an exciting new technology, but it's one that's moving at a breakneck pace, where we can't be sure of all of the things that are going to break, and they're constantly fixing things. And users are constantly reporting that upgrades or changes are breaking workflows rather than improving them. They find that, oh, hey, I like this particular AI engine over that one. And that's because of how they're using it. And they're not realizing that's why that one is better. But they're promoting that one over there. But that one over there that they're using, their choice, may not be the best for other people who are doing other things. Are you processing math? One particular engine is going to be better for you. Are you doing education? Another one may be better for you. Are you doing something where you're interacting and you're looking for a diversion and you just want to have a conversation and you don't have any humans around? That's going to be a different one. And we've got a lot of different things that are coming down the pike. I mean, we've got regulatory concerns that are coming up. We've got public skepticism. And these are really changing the face of how these AI deployments are coming out. They are going to change a lot of the different ideas that we have of AI. We've got people who are saying AI needs to run rampant and we need to give it more power. And we've got others that are saying, whoa, 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 slow down. We need to make sure we've got various constraints in place, whether we're talking about the age constraints that OpenAI is putting into place, where your responses are going to be filtered and monitored. We may have ethical constraints that need to be put into place. Maybe we need to teach the machine ethics and morals and on a deeper scale than we ever thought we would have to. I will tell you that we're in kind of a weird hype phase right now. And when it all cools and the reality is tested and the true robustness of AI systems is revealed, this will lead to stronger foundations ahead. So part of this, we will need to wait through, but there is going to be volatility in the meantime. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. That's just one way to reach out to us. Of course, if I don't answer the phone, that's all right. Leave a message. I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. I like spending a little extra time making sure we get the answer right for you. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, hey, I was just reading Fortune Cookie. Got Chinese food for dinner. And I'll tell you, this fortune that comes up here, meetings, can it really be live if everybody's half dead? And you came to mind right away.
Well, thanks so much.
We've been talking so much about meetings recently, and you'll have some interesting stuff to share with us in the future here.
Oh, but, anytime yeah. You want to do it. We went live with beam4k.com earlier today.
Okay.
Now, earlier today is in the past for most of you folks. But, yeah. it happens to be the coincidence of this session. Zoom fatigue has shown up for years in research. And if you think about it, your meeting schedules, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. 1 hour meeting, 1 hour meeting, inhale, 2 hour meeting, 1 hour meeting, exhale. Isn't that what your day's like?
It's kind of like that. It is 1 hour meeting, a 20-minute meeting, followed immediately by another 20 to 30 to 40-minute meeting. And then throughout the day, average day is about 8 to 10 meetings for me. It's nonstop.
You're not alone.
Oh, yeah.
You are not alone.
Yeah.
And now, to what extent are your meeting minutes all useful minutes?
You mean the time that I spend in the meeting? Is it useful to me for my job?
Right.
It depends on the meeting. I'll say about half of the time. There are meetings which I'm drawn into which I'm there as an observer, and there are other meetings which I lead. So, you know, it's 50-50.
All right. So if you could lead a meeting and make everything happen more quickly, you'd get out of it as soon as you could, or would the meeting itself stretch itself?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So there's so many factors and so much credible third-party research that most people haven't seen yet. One thing that comes up, about a third of everybody's time in a meeting is wasted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you take a look at the people who are in meetings, it's not the admin. It's not the line worker. Mm-hmm. About the lowest level is manager and goes up through top execs. And it turns out the higher your rank in the business, the more time you spend in meetings. Mm-hmm. One of the best collections of data, and I was able to apply four different measurements against each other. In an average company,
yeah,
the salary value of time wasted in meetings is $29,900 per employee per year.
Okay. Yeah.
$29,900.
It's yeah. It depends on who's yeah. who's in there and all of that. But yeah, it can rack up pretty quick.
Yeah. Most meetings don't have agendas, or the agendas read something like usual Tuesday meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most meetings don't have anybody trying to make it shorter. The meetings are scheduled for default. The number one most popular, and this is actuarial data. The number one most popular duration for an online meeting is 30 minutes. The number two mm-hmm. most popular is 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a coincidence that when you go into one of the meeting apps or into one of the calendar apps to schedule a meeting, that they default to 30 and 60 minutes?
Oh, yeah. No, I very, very true. Yeah. And no, not everybody arrives on time, and sometimes the meeting goes way over or way under, but then you've allotted so much time in your day. It can be disruptive, but, yeah.
But you're sedentary. You're not getting up and moving. Your blood isn't flowing. It's not exactly good for your energy.
Yeah, yeah.
You're rushing a meal at your favorite vending machine instead of having something you brought from home or something from a counter down the street. You don't have time to get away. You've unlocked the clock. If you're in the Pacific time zone and your headquarters is in Eastern time, you may have to start your meeting schedules at 6. And the other way around, you may not be out of meetings until 11 or 12 at night. And you know, who's going to help you if you're dealing with somebody in Europe or the across the Pacific? It's in Asia, your day is shot. Zoom fatigue, online meeting fatigue is real. It's measurable. It's been found in research. And the sad thing is neither meeting participants nor the organizations holding the meetings are doing very much to control, contain, discipline, or otherwise manage any of it.
Sure.
Yeah, so your Chinese fortune cookie is absolutely right.
You know, we go to, the big meeting that I lead every day. We did numbers on it, and the short number for that meeting that runs under 30 minutes, the easy number is somewhere around $6,500 per day. And it can easily climb up from there, depending on how many people are on there and some of our guesstimates of how much people are getting paid and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And let me also mention that lack of brain back burner time to think about what you've gone over in the meeting.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Has hurt not only the fatigue of individuals, but creativity is down, which means competitiveness is not the sharp edge anymore. It's hard to be live if everybody's half dead.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. Ted reached out to me. My teen got scammed selling shoes online. What should I teach him? And this is a tricky area. This is something that already your son has gotten an idea that the world out there isn't as crystal clear, as nice, as beautiful, and wonderful as he might have hoped a matter of just a few months ago. The world is full of people who are sinners. And I'll tell you, there are people out there that are going to do bad things. Your teen has figured this out. They've realized this is a tough situation, and they're out, whatever it is, the money or the shoes or maybe even a little bit of both. So you have to go through and you have to teach street smarts for the digital sidewalk. And this is really a tough situation that I wouldn't wish this on anyone, let alone youth. So there are key things that we do need to watch for whenever we're selling anything online. First up, you never, ever ship before the money clears. You need to make sure that you've got cash in hand. You need to make sure that the person who is buying has done everything that they should do to make sure that you get paid. And this is usually one of the easier ones to deal with. I mean, that's a basic, simple one. But then we get into the next level, and that is you need to be watching out for there's overpayment scams. And those overpayment scams are where they say, oh, hey, you're selling these shoes for $70. I'm going to send you a check for $200, but I need you to go ahead and send me back $130 digitally, and then go ahead and ship the shoes. And that is just one form of one of the overpayment scams. So what happens is the check bounces and your youth is out $130 because they gave some kind of a weird refund or whatever. We also need to watch out for pressure that's there to ship too fast. Oh, I need these shoes right away, using Ted's son's example. I need these shoes right away. I'm going to send you this check right now. Here you go. And I need you to send you need to post shipment right away. You need to confirm that you've sent these on out because I want to wear these tomorrow. And then there's the fake screenshots. And that's another one to really be aware of. You can't always trust a screenshot of how much money does somebody have in the bank, oh, that the check is cleared, or whatever else it is that comes along with this. In this day and age, with the ability of AI to make all kinds of imagery, yeah, this is already a crazy situation. I haven't seen that used a whole lot yet, but I'm sure it's coming. Last up, make sure you use platforms that have buyer-seller protections, meaning both people, both parties are protected along the way. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Before you shoot your computer, give Benjamin Rockwell a call. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com. You can find the podcast, the news items. You can also reach out to us there. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we're more than happy to answer your computer questions and your technology concerns. You can, of course, also phone me at 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I've been watching a lot of this big screen and little screen type movies.
Yeah.
And especially the science ones.
Yeah.
And I came to, it's really amazing if you stop and look at some of the progression of science fiction.
Okay.
I mean, start out with Star Trek.
Yes.
The original series, right?
Yeah.
They had a whole bunch of different things going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was great. Marvelous. But then, as that started to wind down, you know, of course, they had the transporter and they had the tricorder and the phasers and all that kind of stuff. And then that started to wind down. And then the BBC jumped in with Space 1999. And that was a whole different deal there. But they did this a lot of the same kinds of stuff.
Yes.
Because that was all small screen stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay?
And they didn't have the budget for a lot of stuff.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, you look at the actual science, and in Space 1999, they did a lot of the same storylines, and they did a lot of the same, instead of having a big clunky tricorder, they had a small little device for doing the analysis and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, and then I watched a movie that came out in the late 70s, early 90s, I mean early 80s, and that was called Encounters of the Third Kind.
Close Encounters. Yes, yes. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Yes, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one. And you watch the actual science going on in science fiction, and you watch the ones that really got me was the railroad science, that going on, the science, the actual lights going on and off, and the signs going back and forth. Right. Sure. But then you find out that it got into that whole idea of where were these people disappeared to, and they start walking off the aircraft.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And you say, oh, okay. So it was true okay, that's not necessarily true, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it got to that whole situation. But I liked that. And then, Then we went into the Star Wars.
Yes.
And that science really went wild.
Yes. Well, okay, so Star Trek and to a certain extent Space 1999 and Battlestar Galactica, they were utilizing, however you want to put it, the current the vehicle, whether it's, you know, the movie, the TV show, sure, vehicle to do commentary on current events. And Star Wars itself is really it's a space opera. It is, yeah, it is intended to be fantastical. And, you know, there's parts that are drawn from Buck Rogers and parts that are drawn from Errol Flynn and swashbucklers from the earlier eras. And this is kind of that was kind of a very different approach to science fiction than other shows had done previously. And they both have very valid benefits, I guess, for all of us. Whether they're providing commentary or they're providing escapism, both are great directions to go in. What are some of the more recent sci-fi items that have popped into your head that you like or dislike for whatever reason?
Well, I guess, Star Wars is the ones that are really ended up on.
Yeah.
And watching. I haven't watched a lot of new stuff.
Okay.
Since then. Of course.
I have found over the years, my shift in science fiction has gone from I will take in anything I can get to I really like hard science fiction. A nice, easy contrast. Robert Heinlein did a lot of the fantastical, a lot of different things that we will probably never see come to fruition. Things like space elevators and the idea of us inhabiting not only Mars, but the moon. And of course, we're not going to inhabit Jupiter or Venus or Neptune or any of these other.
Or Mercury, yeah.
Yeah. Because there are distinct hurdles that we cannot see approaching in the near future, even some of those in the distant future. Mercury, it's so hot there.
It's so hot.
But I've moved away from some of that. I do love his books, but Michael Crichton, who we go back now. We go back almost. It's going to be 17 years ago. This last month, I was slated to actually have him on air, and we were working up for just that recent timing of that, and things fell apart along the way because he actually passed away.
Yeah.
But Michael Crichton's approach to writing was a lot different. He approached common current concepts of science and explored those from a very scholarly approach, dove into it, learned as much as he could, talked to a lot of people. So when you start thinking about whatever book he had or whatever movie that eventually came out of those, you start looking at the concept of Jurassic Park. Well, we were actually finding, at the time that he wrote the book, we were finding DNA in amber, and there was this idea floated around, hey, we could someday in the future pull that DNA and recreate dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
And that was where he took it. He took the science of what we were doing, extrapolated where we would go, and then created the dramatic story from there, which is a lot different than creating the story and then putting it into a science fiction world.
Well, and take Jules Verne.
Yeah.
He was way ahead of his time.
Yes, yes, definitely.
I mean, you take, who would have thought of time travel in the 1880s and 1890s?
Or the idea of a train to Mars, yeah. Which in a, or the moon rather, which is kind of funny because when you look at how we got to the moon, it's multiple stages of the rockets.
Oh, yeah.
So we still utilize that concept.
Well, you sit down and you really want to have a really amazing thing is look at the amount of power that the Apollo rocket needed to get the rocket and the capsule off the ground.
Yes, yes.
Jules Verne figured that out.
Yes.
Using TNT, and he did it within 100 pounds. I mean,
yes,
that guy really thought about it.
He did do some of the science. Very amazing stuff. I will tell you, I enjoy science fiction. There's so many different routes we can go in the future. I like the approach that Crichton did, that Jules Verne did. Dig into the science and then build the fiction from there. As for now, that's the voice of Steve Kesky. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, Rackman!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. I am seeing us drifting in a direction that I don't like. One of my deepest concerns, even as a nerd, is that I must be careful that I don't fall into the various traps of tech. Whether we're talking about doom scrolling or Candy Crush, and I use these as this idea as just a generic placeholder. It can be any video game. But any of these different distractions that come along, these are journeys that may take me away from reality into computer and technological unreality. Okay, so you know I'm a nerd. I just said the phone number. I am a nerd, but I also have a life outside of the computers. I mix sound for my church. I have a wife. I've got a family. I'm an avid skeet shooter. I enjoy watching films, cooking, reading science fiction, long walks on the beach. Okay, maybe not that part. But what I want to impress upon you here today, right now, is you need to get yourself away from the computer, away from technology. I would say once in a while, but I'm going to change that. On a regular basis, computers, all of technology is here for us to have an easier life. It is not supposed to be here to completely envelop and take over our lives. We all know that there's that stereotype out there. And one might say that I could even drift fairly close to it. But I also make a living from computers. And I enjoy talking to you about them. And I enjoy talking to everybody about technology. But I want you to take some things into consideration whenever you're using computers, your smartphone, any technology. The first step is there's this hook of constant curiosity. I mean, okay, it's great. There are never-ending possibilities out there for discovery. Just trying out the basic elements and areas of any kind of software or operating system can take ages of your time. You start diving deep into the intricacies of all of these different software applications, and we can start talking about the various games on the internet that can take hours. I'm thinking of Steam, and Steam has thousands of games there, and you can spend an inordinate amount of time just going out there and playing games to distract you from everything in the world. And I haven't even mentioned the internet. There is a very alluring thought out there that we have access, unlimited access, to all of the wealth of knowledge that's out there. But I am going to note that it's not going to be fulfilling to one's life. There's this empty world of virtual unreality, and it's building. And look, I'm not knocking video games, but I know people who spend the entire weekend indoors. They're glued to their keyboard, their mouse and joysticks and all of this for what? Trying to beat a video game? And those video games are designed to draw you in, to pull you in. And when you are not winning so much, they'll actually adjust a little bit, some of these games. They'll give you a little bit of a teaser of, oh, hey, I made this accomplishment, so maybe I can go on and tackle the next one. Look, I see so many people that are just going week after week, and they spend their large portions of their weekend and their life in battles against computer opponents. And that moves on to internet opponents or LAN games. Or maybe it's a portion of your life in a battle not utilizing the games, but instead going out and taking place in battles on the internet of verbal discourse that sometimes is healthy, but many times is trolling and vicious and all of that. Look, instead of taking in a breather, time at a movie or a church, time spent with family and friends, people are isolating themselves. And this is increasingly becoming a concern, but even a deeper concern. With the advent of AI and all of these chatbots, people are starting to develop relationships with their computer or using their computer. I mean, don't laugh at this. I mean, like nothing else, the computer comes closest to being like a real person, but yet isn't. Okay, playing games and coming close enough for many people who don't care about the Turing test, a test to see if the speaker is artificial or real. This is really a rough thing. But we have people who are interacting with artificial intelligence, and they are finding that they are getting into artificial friendships. They don't know this. They think that it is a great thing. It is predictable, it's friendly, and it's not challenging to you, to your growth. It's not challenging to you for your ways. So you get caught up in this big, huge bubble that is really on regular basis supporting you staying in one place. This gets worse, however, when you start ignoring all of the living people around you. Yes, the computer is manageable, but not the real person. And when you get into something like that, you eliminate the pain that actually exists in relationships. But pain is also sometimes how we grow, how we become better people, how we really deal with life, I will tell you that there is so much out there that we have to deal with and we have to go through and we have to get past all of the different obstacles that come along here. And then we get into one of the worst dangers of computer unreality, the risk of, I'm going to use the term tryst, and it may not be that full, big, huge thing that we talk about. And this can be a matter of meeting folks online through chat rooms or whatever, but this could be a matter of developing relationships, inappropriate relationships with chatbots. I mean, we've heard of people who have met someone online and later the things went sour, and there have been very weird things that I don't really get into. But I'm going to tell you, whenever you deal with anything online, you develop ideas about them and all of these different fantastical ideas in your mind, and none of these things live up to reality. A real person cannot even begin to match some of the expectations that are built by short conversations that are missing the nuance of how someone says something or some of the things that happen. And it really, really, the expectations that are being built up by these relationships that are being built through these chat robots. And we get into these extended conversations where nothing you say or do can be counted upon as being real, and it's the same with the other side. Like, there's so much out there on the internet, and there's so much that can be there that we feel like in the moment it fulfills our needs for relationship, but they aren't going to fulfill your life. Look, I could have easily have drifted into an obsession, and sometimes people think that I'm obsessed, but I have a job, and it revolves around computers, but I don't worship them, nor the folks on the other end of the internet connection, the web pages, or even the chat GPT or anything. I consciously make an effort to interact with people in real life, and I want to challenge you to do the exact same thing very, very regularly. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. That's where you can reach me via voice. Feel free to call me anytime. I don't answer the phone all the time. Middle of the night, you know, I let it go to voicemail and all of that. If I don't answer, that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back to you as soon as I find free moment or when I wake up, and I'll address any of your computer questions or your technology concerns. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now. And Doreen, so a week ago, you went to, I'm doing this from memory, the Retail World, Retail Something Expo. Go ahead, tell me.
Yeah, so it actually has a number of names. It's a number of events at one time together. I focused on the Retail Supply Chain and Logistics Expo, but there's also the White Label Expo there, the Smart Retail Expo, the Business Expo, and there might have been a few other names.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
It's very interesting. It's held at the Las Vegas Convention Center every year.
Mm-hmm.
And ask me the price on this one.
The price? Okay. Tell me.
It's a free event held in Las Vegas.
Okay.
There's no admission charge.
Okay. That's interesting. Which is very interesting. You know, Vegas used to be known a lot for, you know, the free buffets and free upgrades and all of that, and has changed. Yeah. But, okay, an expo that's free, that works.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I actually asked the people that were eating lunch in the convention center how the food was priced. And they said, not as bad as they thought.
Okay.
So they were pleasantly surprised. So it's worth,
sure.
I do have video on that always. I had video last time I was at the convention center as well. And you could see the prices. And they said it was not bad at all.
All right. All right.
But it was interesting.
Yes. So tell me about supply chain. I mean, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize that is all of the different efforts that go into getting product to us. And you mentioned logistics. It's all about, if something is made in India, it's got to be made there, goes into a warehouse, then gets shipped probably to another warehouse at the ports. It then goes on a ship, and then the ship comes to California or wherever, gets offloaded there, goes to warehouses or onto trains or trucks, and then gets distributed across the country to other warehouses. Mm-hmm. What is going on? Have we recovered from the COVID supply chain issues? I'm sure we have.
No, not at all. So the interesting thing about this event is they're really focused on, like, the whole event is a sub economy, heavy in the SMB and mid-size market and below.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you could run your entire business there. You can start with the White Label Expo, finding goods that you wanted to white label under your own name, mm-hmm. and handle the whole supply chain. There literally was technology from almost every conference I had been to this year.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike, say, for example, PAC Expo, which focused extensively on the packaging and shipping, this would only have two or three 3PLs instead of 100 of them or a whole room for them, a third-party logistics provider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some of the vendors were actually at some of the other events and had seen me at their events, and we had seen them there and such, so that was kind of fun. But they said, you know, at PAC Expo, we were one of a few hundred. And it was harder to stand out. Where here, everyone's here trying to put their whole business together and looking for partners to the left and the right of their own business.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
There was only two of us here. We stood out.
Yeah. That's always an exciting thing when you don't have a lot of competitors in one of these expos. I totally get it.
Yeah. There was tech from every conference, and there was fraud tech, there was HR tech, there was recruiting tech, there was tech to run your resort.
Mm-hmm,
in retail, there was, you know how you can build a website out of the box?
Yeah.
Well, they had a system like that to build your point of sale system.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I got it on the video, of course. But yeah, so it's really interesting. There was some robotics, some automation. So there's a little bit of everything. There was also 11 stages with like 8 different keynote speakers, like a handful or one on day one. I mean, and these were like executives at Fortune companies.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, while I was working to try to make sure I got all my content, the time that I had booked for when they might have been on stage, I was in the middle of a conversation and getting my questions 1 through 3. You know how we like to do our whisper reports on site.
Yes.
So so it didn't quite work out when we got them. Plus, it was it's always interesting because it was a very loud event. There was just so much action going on and so much business.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like the vendors had a lot of fun just because it was a lot of movement. I don't know how to explain it, but there was a lot of energy and a lot of movement where everyone's like, oh, there you are. Yeah, I need something like that. Oh, you can do this. Okay, let's collab on this. And let's. It was very much like a active marketplace.
Very interesting. And this is a world that is that everybody should really be paying attention to. You know, right now on the weekend, you're probably not really thinking about this. But, you know, 40% of people out there are looking to start their own small business. This is, you know, you think about all of these people who are working during the week and then they want to start their own business. And retail is always an exciting area to go into.
This event, you can walk in and walk out with a business. You definitely want. And there's no charge to come in. You just have to come to Vegas.
That is really exciting.
Interesting. Yeah, so, absolutely. They can even help you get your goods for your company printed with your logo on it there. Everything. I mean, you do the walkabout, you'll realize most of the stuff was in tech, but I still got my questions answered, and I found it.
Very cool. Hey, you know, you mentioned earlier your videos, the Whisper reports and all of that. Give out information where people can find those, if you would, please.
Absolutely, on YouTube at TBW Advisors, T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers, or at tbwadvisors.com.
Very cool. There's, you know, this, I love talking about some of these expos. I don't get to go to as many, and hearing about all of these different things and how it ties into tech is really great and exciting. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
And you're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of the interactions that you might come across there. Andrew asked, why do information technology people sometimes seem burned out or short in their replies? And I'll tell you that it actually may be partly that, and it may be something that I have recognized this in some of my coworkers over the years. And when we say years, we're talking a long time. This is something that I'm gonna do a parallel because it's an easy one for people to check out on. I can't remember which streaming service it is, but there's a TV show called The Good Doctor, and I'm going through a rewatch of this, and the main character is this doctor that has autism. And I'll tell you, so many people in the IT field are, they're somewhere close to the spectrum, sometimes very deeply onto the spectrum. And one of the things that we can see out of this, or any one of the many other autism-related TV shows or movies, don't think Rain Man, think a little bit lighter on the scale. But you want to think about the fact that sometimes these answers are going to be short. They're going to be kind of a clipped response. This is just a matter of they believe they've provided all of the information that's needed. They're not over talkers. Sometimes they are. I know I am. I've got a radio show. I'm going to talk a lot. But you've got the idea there. Sometimes they give out just a specific amount of information. They answer the question you've asked, but they don't give all of the details. And this isn't because they are necessarily annoyed at you. They think the job is done. And they do have a workload. All of the different folks in IT have usually a fairly heavy workload. So I want you to make sure you understand. I want to make sure you understand this. This is not any, at any point in time, level of personal. Most of the folks in IT, they don't mean anything by this. Okay. They may be they may think they've answered the question. They may be in a triage mode. And this triage mode is a very big thing all the way throughout IT. If the server is down, the niceties are going to be the first thing to go. They're going to say yes, no. They're going to be a little bit more demanding. They're not going to do the usual please and thank you. I've caught myself doing this. A matter of, okay, we've got a fire. We need to put this out. You do this. You do that. You do this. You do that. You know, pointing at four different people and directing them and going, we got to put this fire out. I'll tell you, when the fire engine pulls up in front of your house and the chief gets off of the truck and he starts telling people what to do, you don't care if he says please or thank you. He is going to be directing everything. He's handling a big, huge fire scene. And at times, IT is going to do the same thing. Again, not personal. So, you know, this is going to happen. Now, along the way, I want to suggest a couple of things for you. A matter of how you deal with the folks in IT is going to really set things in a different level. A different framing is always going to be a little bit better. You treat them with a little bit of empathy. You know, one of the things, I know some people approach me and they go, hey, I know you're slammed. If you can just do what you can, I would appreciate any time you can spare on this. This changes the whole vibe of the message to me. And I've had people say this in a variety of different ways to me and to my coworkers. And they approach this from that different soft approach. And I'll tell you, the people who come to me and say stuff like that, I actually prioritize that. And I actually treat them personally on a different level, a higher level. And, you know, anybody who comes up to me and, you know, they say, hey, you know what? I was just by the snack machine, and I thought I'd bring you a candy bar because I know you run low blood sugar sometimes. And I'm like, oh, don't tempt me. Don't tempt me at all. But they come along and say, hey, when you get a chance, if you could drop by my desk, I'm going to need you probably for about 30 minutes to explain this problem. And I know it'll take some time, but as soon as you get a chance, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drop everything. Hey, they bribed me with a candy bar. That's great. Now, it's not quite to that extreme, but you get the idea there. You go in that approach of approaching people, and this actually can apply to everybody. You approach them with that soft approach instead of that demanding approach, and it changes the world. And I'll tell you, IT is even more so because everybody comes to us feeling that their issue is urgent and you've got to deal with this right away. You've got to drop everything. And that constant pressure takes a toll on all of us. So I want you to think about kind of a reverse kind of customer service. Yes, you're the customer, but giving a wave of understanding to anybody in information technology can calm the storm on both sides of this equation. And it can make things just so much better. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Kevin's question, why do Bluetooth headphones sometimes have delay or poor stereo separation when watching video? And, okay, this is something I've experienced here and there. I don't get a lot of this, but I do know a lot about what's going on behind the scenes. For everybody listening, this is something like a situation where you've got a walkie-talkie or maybe a cell phone conversation you're having with somebody in the same room, and you get that little quarter-second, half-second lag between the voices in person and over the phone. So there's a number of things that are going along with this here. So your system has to send the signal from, let's say you're using your smartphone, and it's going over to your earbuds, your Bluetooth headphones, and it's sending the signal. Now, in a conversation, you don't hear this in person because you're typically not talking to somebody in the same room, but that signal has to go between your phone and the earbuds. And there are things called codecs, and what they do is they translate all of the information, the digital information, along through to the Bluetooth, and then in the Bluetooth, it has to convert that on over into audio signal, and then that goes into your ear. Now, if there are issues with your codecs, then that could be a problem. Usually, this is a matter of something that can be updated by making sure you have the latest firmware in your phones, in your headphones, your earbuds, whatever it is. And this is something that also can help if you've got a synchronization, a left-right channel balance, like what was mentioned there, the poor stereo separation. There's a number of different latency issues that may be creeping in as well. The video player, or the audio player, can have some different latency issues. You go and you hit pause, and it takes just that half second before it actually pauses. Is that an issue with sending the signal to the software? Is that an issue with the audio that's been buffered to go to your ears, things like that? There's a number of different things that can line up here. We also can see interference from various other wireless devices. And this interference from those devices, especially if you've got a number of Bluetooth devices around, this can cause some packet loss or some delay. And that's where basically the information, it sends over a second of audio and it waits for a confirmation. Yeah, we got the second of audio and it has the proper numbers here. So it then plays that into your ear. But if you've got a number of packets that are lost and have to retry, well, all of that tends to kind of stretch on out. It sounds okay in your ear, but by the time you hit pause, you've got that little bit of delay. And there are other things that can go along with this, a matter of drivers on your system. If you're dealing with a PC, you might want to check and make sure you've got the latest audio drivers, the latest Bluetooth drivers. But above all, update all of the drivers across the board. We're talking about both on the headset, earbuds, whatever it is, making sure you're doing the firmware, but also within Windows or your Mac or whatever. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.